Good morning. This is Alicia Bales in the studio for a special Friday morning open lines program with John Hashak in the studio with me, who will talk to us for the hour. He's with us to talk about current issues faced by the Board of Supervisors and to take your calls. Welcome, John Hashak.
Well, thank you, Alicia. Thanks for having me here, and I'm glad to be here in Philo.
John Hashak is Mendocino County's 3rd District Supervisor. He was sworn in with Ted Williams of the 5th District in January of 2019. And before that, he had 29 years in the classroom as a Spanish teacher and teacher of English language development at all grade levels. He was president of the local teachers union in Willits for 18 years, the Willits Teachers Association, and involved at all levels of the California Teachers Association and the National Education Association. So we'll talk a little bit, and then we'll open up the phone lines for your questions and comments at 11:20 or so. The number for the studio is 895-2448 if you'd like to join the conversation with John Hashak. But first, let's start out. You've been on the board, John, for 8 months now, since January.
Right.
What originally motivated you to run, and are you finding that you are able to accomplish some of your goals as a supervisor?
Well, those are good questions. I was a teacher, and I was very happy in that position. But then as I got more and more involved with the teachers union, and I could see that I could make change outside of the classroom. And when Tom Woodhouse went absent from the board, I saw that there was an opening, and I looked around and tried to see where there was a person who could step up and present kind of the political view I have for the direction for our county, and I didn't see that, so I entered my name into that selection process that the governor had, and I wasn't selected. And so then when Supervisor Kroski decided not to run for election after her appointment, then I looked around again and didn't see anyone who was fitting that bill that I had. And so I decided to run. And that's how I got into the position. And I think that what's surprised me most about the job is the number of constituent issues that arrive daily, and just trying to help people. I really enjoy that part of it, helping people with their daily concerns and problems and issues with the county, and how to help them resolve that and connect them to the right people. So that's been really rewarding. And then also, you know, the big picture of the direction of the county, I think that that's crucial to providing a new direction for this county.
When you talk about no one who fit the bill, that no one who aligned with your political values or whatever, how would you describe that? What are your political values?
Well, I guess I really decided to run after President Obama said after the election of the current president, and he made a statement, a speech about, you know, the way to get out of this mess that we're in is going to be by community involvement and getting involved civically in issues at hand and what we can do locally. And I'd been involved a lot at the state level with California Teachers Association. And I thought that it was time for me to bring it back home and work on these issues that are in our neighborhoods.
And so what have some of your priorities been in these 8 months in terms of bringing people into the local community government process?
Well, certainly emergency preparedness. And I've been working a lot with Brook Trails and Sherwood Road and areas around Willits, and making sure that they're prepared in case of a disaster or emergency of any kind of nature, but certainly wildfires are the big concern right now. I think economic development has been a huge one, and I've been working on it and trying to get career and technical education launched more so than it is, and coordinated between different agencies that are working on it. I've been working with Senator McGuire on that, and I think I have a meeting next week with Senator McGuire and Superintendent Hutchins from Mendocino County Office of Education, trying to coordinate our activities and provide more direction for what the county might need and what we can do to provide those skills and the trainings that people need. You know, we hear about the hospitals not being able to have, fill their positions for medical assistance. We hear about construction needs, you know, the heavy trades, all sorts of issues that we could be looking at and trying to provide more career and technical education.
So you see the hiring issues that we have in the county as being caused by the need for career and technical education? How does that solve that problem?
Like in the case of the medical assistants, that they're not receiving a high wage. In fact, I think it's, you know, $15 or $18 an hour. And so they're not able to attract those people to our county just for that kind of wage. And so we really need to get people who are trained here, who are locally based, who have an affinity towards Mendocino County, get them trained and provide that kind of skill level that people can stay here and have a nice job and provide the services that we need as a community.
So instead of trying to recruit from out of the area, you see providing career and technical education for locals here in the county. What are some of the practical examples of what that would look like?
It would be, coordinating with the Mendocino College and the high schools and also provide, you know, so that they can provide some of those trainings. And they are doing some, but it's not enough, because we see that when we have a lottery system for a nursing program or any of these technical programs, then there's more desire for those than there are spaces. And we still aren't filling the positions that we need. We aren't able to train enough people at this point. So it's really working more closely with the secondary education and the community college, and also reaching out to the private industry and seeing where they will offer internships. And I've talked to the Farm Bureau, I've talked to the Employers Council, and they're saying, hey, we're up for, you know, providing some of that training, doing internships, because they need employees and they need to train them.
Mm-hmm. So as a policy level, if you're trying to create this kind of these kinds of programs and opportunities for folks here in the county, what are you going to talk with Mike McGuire about, Senator McGuire, when you're talking about what government can do to support or create these kinds of things?
Right. Senator McGuire has been a great proponent of career and technical education, and he had a bill a couple years ago that provided $700 million statewide for career and technical education.
So it's really about money.
Well, it could be, but it's also seeing where the barriers are, seeing what the obstacles are for people, and to move forward and to see what we can do on the state level, but also locally.
Mm-hmm. So, if he sponsored a bill in the state to provide money for this program, then you would work with private industry and the college and I'm just trying to, you know, we have all these big ideas, and then when it comes down to where the rubber meets the road, there's all of these unforeseen obstacles or, you know, unintended consequences, and all of this stuff comes up. And since you're in that seat where you can really make these things happen, I wonder what, when you're talking about the practical solutions, what does it mean on the ground? What does it mean for people here in the county?
Well, what I've found is that there's a lot of people who are doing good work in this county, but sometimes they're doing it in their silo. They're doing it individually or within their entity. And so the college might be doing something here. EDFC might be doing something. You know, the Workforce Alliance is doing things. And so sometimes it's just getting people together and talking about what everyone's doing, what the common vision is, and making sure that we're all working and not duplicating our efforts, but rather working towards that common goal.
Well, another example of that is what you were talking about with emergency preparedness. I know that Burke Trails is, you know, that road in and out, the one way in and out during some catastrophic fire event has been a concern for the community for a long time. So same thing. What are some of the practical steps? What are some of the obstacles you're finding now that you're in a position of leadership and able to work on it?
Yeah, that's a great question and great example of this. And so right now, we've been working with CAL FIRE on this emergency access route, which is called the FERCO Road. That's just one of them going from Brook Trails over to Highway 101. And Brook Trails and Sherwood Road was considered by the governor and the study as one of the top 20 places in the state for, you know, fitting their criteria for a fire hazard and accessibility and all that. So
not in a good way. This wasn't the best, no. The 20 best.
This was in one of a good way in that it certainly has directed resources towards Brook Trails and Sherwood Road. And so we're doing that FERCO Road clearance. We've got MOUs that I was able to work with the private property owners because it's private property through there. And so we got MOUs signed between Brook Trails and those property owners. And then CAL FIRE has been able to go in and clear 100 feet on each side of the road. And it's a dirt road. And so now it's pretty, it's for firefighting reasons, it's a very doable situation where they can get in there easily and it will be clear and it's a fire break and all of those other things that we're looking for. And so we're looking for all these options. But one of the things I've been working on is getting the different entities to talk to each other. And so next week on Wednesday, we have a meeting and we're getting, and I'll run down this list of entities that we're going to have together to talk, to do one of these tabletop talks, to go over what scenarios might happen and who's going to play what roles and the responsibilities, because we have people who have lots of experience doing it and we also have people who are new to the area or their positions. So we've got CAL FIRE, we've got the sheriff, we've got the hospital, Howard Hospital in Willits, we've got the Willits PD, CHP, the County Office of Emergency Services, the Brook Trails General Manager and the Fire Department, the County's Department of Transportation, Howard DeShiel. And so we're going to, and let's see. Oh, I think that's about it. But also the CEO, the Deputy CEO, Steve Dunnicliffe, is going to be helping with that. And so the idea is just to get people to talk about what the situation is, what are the updates, and where are we with the overall preparedness for these situations.
So not just ingress and egress, not just being able to get in and out of Brook Trails, but the overall emergency preparedness. What are some of the big issues for emergency preparedness up there that you'll be talking about on Wednesday?
Well, it's certainly knowing what the options are, and I've been meeting with other private landowners who have roads going out of that area, and we just need to make sure that, you know, they're on board and that we can look at their property, we can survey the road, we can determine what needs to be done, and so that we're better prepared, and we have these options so that the professionals who are dealing with emergency response and evacuation will know what the options are, they know exactly the current state of these roads, because, you know, they're busy people that they might not have seen these roads in the last 10 years and maybe changes have happened. And so we want to be able to provide them that update and work with the private property owners to ensure that we're doing everything we can.
Making sure there's signs, it's clear where to go. I remember hearing stories about the Redwood Complex fire of folks in Redwood Valley in the middle of the night in these kind of trains, you know, these caravans going out the the few roads that get out of the valley. And I just imagine at Brook Trails that same kind of thing. If people were, heaven forbid, in that situation, that they would be, you know, driving the roads in these big caravans trying to get out. When you have a situation where you have only one way in and out, you know, people start to get backed up. And you're talking about the emergency vehicles getting in, but what about people being able to leave? Are you thinking about these private roads being the way that people can get out, and how do people learn the routes and know that it's okay to drive on them and that kind of stuff?
Well, that's one of the issues, is that the sheriff is going to determine what the process is, where the emergency access routes are, and what ones are to be used, because obviously it's depending upon what's happening with the fire or the emergency. And so that's for the sheriff to determine. It's not for individual people to determine. And so what my role is, I feel, is to just to get these people together and make sure everyone knows what the latest, greatest information is.
Great. We're talking with Supervisor John Hashak of the 3rd District. My name is Alicia Bales, and we will be opening up the phone lines for your calls. The number in the studio here is 895-2448, and I welcome you to call and join the conversation. We've had a number of these supervisor open line shows in the last couple of weeks, and I hope that you find them useful and appreciate the access to your elected representatives. So if you'd like to talk with John Hashak of the 3rd District Supervisor, you can call 895-2448, and I will continue to ask my many questions as well while we're waiting for your calls. You were talking about the scholarship program that you started, that you have Is that right? Two recipients of the scholarship program? Can you just introduce us to that?
No, we have three scholarships that I started. And the deal was that when the supervisors gave themselves a 40% raise last year before I was on the board, that I didn't think that was right. It wasn't appropriate in light of that the line workers weren't getting that. And as a longtime union leader, I didn't think that was the right way to go. It didn't set a good example. I don't think that the supervisors are underpaid, but at the same time, I didn't think it was a fair deal for the line workers. And so I did what Supervisor Jurdy did, was the line workers were getting paid, according to the study, 18% below market rate overall. And so he took 18% below market rate as his salary. And the supervisors, with that 40% increase almost, that they gave themselves a market rate. So that's how he came up with 18%. And so I decided to do something similar, but instead of just giving it back to the county, people in my district were saying, hey, you should create a scholarship with that. So I took that money and created three different scholarships, one for Willits, one for Laytonville, and one for Covelo. And I worked with the Mendocino Community Foundation. We created these scholarships that would be $1,000 a year for 4 years for that student's college career, hopefully, or part of it. And so that would be $12,000 in scholarships that was given out this year.
And who received them?
There was, Samantha Cox in Laytonville and Savannah Hoffmeister in Willits. And
I put you on the spot. Sorry about that.
Mariah Arteaga in Covelo.
And are they all Mendocino College students? What kind of students are they?
No, I think Savannah is going to UCLA, which is my alma mater.
Oh.
And Miss Cox in Laytonville is going to Northern Arizona, and the woman from Covelo is going to Humboldt.
Okay.
And they're all going to do public service. So whether it's teaching or physical therapy or social work, that's what they're all studying. So anyway, that was the criteria for the scholarship, was to be working in or studying for social or some kind of social public service.
And so they all applied, and then you were able to choose the recipients?
Right, and it was hard because there was lots of good applicants for it, but they were the ones who received it.
Are you going to do it again next year?
That's the plan.
Even if the line workers get a little bit more in line with market wages now?
Well, the line workers will get more closer to the market rate according to the contract that we just signed with them. And so I'll have to reevaluate it. But the idea was to be more in line with the line workers and hopefully we're getting the line workers up to market rate, and so we can attract and attain quality people.
Yeah, well, as a union organizer for 18 years, you came to the board with a certain point of view, and all 8 of your bargaining units are going into contract negotiations. You just last week signed your first round of contracts. Can you talk about that, what that was like for you, and tell us what we need to know about the contracts you signed?
Right. We signed a contract with 2 bargaining units, SEIU 1021 and also the McPaw, who represent the attorneys, the district attorneys, and the public defenders.
McPaw, Mendocino right. County Public Attorneys.
Right. And SEIU 1021 represents about 700 of the county workers throughout all departments, I think. And so the deal we got worked out with them, negotiated with them, was that they all get a 3% raise. But then according to the COF study, which was done and just came out this year, is that we were finding that some people were 40% below market rate. Some people were 10. Some people were actually, a few people were above market rate. And so not very many.
Who?
Though. There were just a couple positions, but they were positions. And so what we did was, if you were over, 30% out of market, then we were going to bring you back. And the idea is over a three-year period, we're going to bring everyone up to within 10%, or if it's a funded position by the state, within 5% of market rate.
Does that include in-home social service workers in SEIU 2015, since they're funded by the state?
We haven't dealt with them yet. They're in negotiations right now. And so my hope is that we can bring them to a better position.
What's it like for you to be a union organizer in the seat of the management side this time around?
Well, it's it's not a totally unique situation for me or a new experience, because when I was involved with the California Teachers Association, I was a vice chair of the budget committee, but I was running the meetings of the budget committee, and we had to deal with our bargaining units. And so we were representing the association overall and having to deal with the union dues and how to negotiate with 2 bargaining units, who the people in those units were professional organizers. So it was tough bargaining at times, and we had to hold the line or do what was best for the organization. And it's the same thing being on that side of the table.
So you have to keep in mind the constraints that the county faces?
Certainly. But I also have empathy for the people who were organizing, who were out there, you know, at the administrative center of the county. You know, I can relate to that. And I think that they felt like they were respected in this round of bargaining. And I think that the county had an issue where we needed to solve some serious problems. And this deal will help us move in solving those problems, hopefully.
You're listening to KZYX. This is Alicia Bales in the studio with 3rd District Supervisor John Hashak. And this is an open lines program, so you can call in at 895 2448 and ask your question or make your comment, engage in conversation with your supervisor, John Hashak. Or I can just keep asking you questions as well, but we would like to allow you access to your elected representatives to ask any question that's on your mind. All right, we do have a call. Are you ready?
Sure.
Hi, caller. You're on the air.
Hi. Am I on the air?
You're on the air. Go ahead.
I wanted to ask John. Oh, first of all, thank you, John, for representing us. You truly are a great guy who represents the people and not just the county. But my question, whenever we talk about fire, it's always about evacuation. And we're living in really, farmland, which there's a lot of meadows, and I know where I live, which is up at Third Gate, there's a lot of ponds. And I'm wondering whether any of the properties can't be used for keeping the people on the land rather than evacuating them. But I would have no idea how big a pond would have to be or how deep it would have to be or how big a meadow would have to be a safe place to have people. So I will hang up, and I'm looking forward to the response. Thanks so much.
All right, great question. Yeah, we've had conversations about shelter in place. And so there's certainly conversations going on with some of the big ranches up along Sherwood Road. And also east of Ukiah, we've had conversations with some of the vineyard owners out there. I'm part of this ad hoc committee on emergency access routes and with Supervisor Jurdy. And so we have had those conversations. We're looking into it. And boy, I don't know about how big a pond needs to be, but whatever in that kind of situation is better than nothing.
All right,
and,
we have.
But we are looking, on the Sherwood Road, we are also looking at kind of clearing off some areas so cars can park. You know, we've had some at the rancheria up in Sherwood Road. I know there's been some conversations, and also Sherwood School.
Great. All right, we have another call. Hi, caller. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you, Supervisor Hashak, for being on the job. You were talking earlier about the need for career and technical education for our local people here so that they will get the training that they need and will hopefully stay in the county where they have roots in the community with family and friends, and they know the community, and hopefully they already have a place to live. And that's very important in all sectors. It's particularly important in law enforcement. I was talking to the woman who runs the office at on the coast for the Mendocino County Sheriff's Office, and she's saying that they are down several deputies. They are really, really shorthanded. And as you probably know, that's generally the case for the sheriff's office all around the whole county, and may well be the case with various police departments. So I had a discussion with the woman in the sheriff's department about programs at the high school and college level to encourage entry-level people to come into local law enforcement, and it doesn't sound like there's much there, and certainly nothing that's coordinated. Now,
do you have a question for the supervisor?
Part two of this is that many people are not attracted to law enforcement because of guns and the violence and that kind of thing. There is a national trend towards approaching law enforcement problems in a soft and conciliatory and effective way that really works and really cuts the crime rate. For example, the crime rate.
All right, I'm going to have to ask you. Excuse me. I'm going to have to ask you. We do have the privilege of having John Hashak in the studio.
Yes.
Would you like to ask him a question?
Okay. Well, thank you for your comments on those subjects about recruiting local people, and hopefully with an emphasis not so much not on the guns and the violence, but on really solving the problems.
All right. Thank you for that, caller.
Well, thank you. Yeah, and certainly I'll have a conversation with the college. I know they do have some law enforcement classes at the college, but those points are well taken.
All right. We have another call. Hello, caller. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hi.
Oh, good morning. It's Brian Weller here from Sherwood Firewise. We've been very, very fortunate to have Supervisor Hashcheck working with us on the Sherwood Firewise project. And, John, I just wondered if you could just give a brief update. You know, we're doing the Ready, Set, Go project at the moment. We had, I think, 120-odd people at our meeting at Brooktrail's Community Centre last night. So it'd be interesting just to hear a brief update from you in terms of what we're doing for the Sherwood communities in that context of Ready, Set, Go. Thank you so much.
Right. Thanks, Brian. Yeah, Sherwood Firewise Council is a perfect example of what communities can do in getting together, getting organized, forming community, and with the purpose of making the community safer. And so Sherwood Firewise Council has done incredible work up there, and they're in the midst of this Ready, Set, Go program that they had a meeting last week. They had 120 people. They had a meeting last night, another 120.
That's amazing.
And they're doing a follow-up, the go part, Saturday morning when they're going to go out and caravan on some of the evacuation routes, like going on Sherwood Road north up towards Laytonville. And so they're doing incredible work. Like I said earlier, Brian, that I've got this committee going to do a tabletop exercise and discussion about what needs to be done. But certainly there's, we're looking at the fire cameras, we're looking at the warning systems, like the sheriff has a new warning system with the English type of two-tone sound, that if you hear that, okay, you can probably do it better than I can. But that would be for evacuation. A mandatory evacuation when you hear that sound. And then there's also been contact with the Civil Air Patrol out of Santa Rosa, that if sirens or warnings need to be brought in, that they can fly up and fly over the area and provide that kind of warning. So there's, you know, we're working, the county is working with UC San Diego Scripps Institute on putting these fire cameras throughout the county. And so we've got that. We're also...
Is this different than PG&E's supposed future fire cameras?
Right. Okay. They're two different sets of fire cameras from my understanding. And then the Mendocino Council of Governments has also got a grant for $280,000 to study communities throughout our county that have situations such as the Brook Trail Sherwood Road, where we're going to look, they're putting out an RFP, a request for proposal, to study these different communities throughout the county that that have limited access. And so the study will be looking at what can be done to provide greater access to these areas. And so that's a $280,000 grant, and it should be worked on throughout the end of this year and throughout next year. And hopefully soon we'll have a big master plan about how to move forward in a real smart way.
Well, these Firewise meetings with 120 people coming to them, what are the people who are coming saying? What are they asking for?
They want to know what to do in case of an emergency. And certainly there's a heightened awareness after the Paradise and the Redwood Valley and all the major fires that we've had in our state and our community. And so they want to know what to do. They want to know that they're as prepared as possible. And they're working together and they're forming a community, and it's beautiful to watch.
All right. 895-2448 is the number in the studio. We're on the air with 3rd District Supervisor John Hashak, who is here live to take your calls. 895-2448, and the line is open for you. I know this week at the Board of Soups, you passed. Oh, we do have a call, so we'll take the caller. Hello, caller. You're on the air. Go ahead. Oh, your line is breaking up. We cannot hear you. Can you call back on a landline if you can? 895-2448. So I was going to ask you about the Indigenous Peoples Day proclamation that you passed this week.
Right. That was a beautiful moment, too, is that it was...
Let's hold on to it for just a second because that caller's calling back. Hey, caller, you're on the air. Nope, it's just not working. Sorry, we cannot hear you.
All right, so Supervisor McCowan and I co-sponsored this Indigenous Peoples Day agenda item, and it passed unanimously. It was when I came on the Board of Supervisors, you know, from the public schools, that we didn't have a holiday for the second Monday of October, whether it was called Indigenous Peoples Day or Columbus Day. And so it wasn't really a part of my life at that point. But then when I got to the county and I saw that there was this Columbus Day holiday, I was actually shocked. And so I thought, wow, that's something, especially considering that we have 3 federally recognized tribes in the 3rd District, 10 recognized tribes in Mendocino County. And here we have these great communities that are being dissed. You know, when I was in the Peace Corps in Guatemala, I lived in an Indigenous community, and I still have a very close relationship. I go back every year to Guatemala to live with this family that took me in.
Oh, where was it?
It was in San Pedro Zacatepecas, which is in the Department of Guatemala. In Guatemala.
We have 2 callers on the line. Would you like to take another call? Hi, caller. You're live on the air.
Are you talking to me?
Yep, you are.
I just didn't know which one of the 2 I am. Okay, so back on sort of the fire issue, something that in this kind of weather is a big deal. I wondered how work is going on the shaded fuel break, because that seems like the key to a lot of these other things working. And I wondered if that started, how it's going, what sort of, you know, what is the current state of affairs on that? Because without that, it's sort of a linchpin. You know, the other things don't really work unless you can get those firefighters up through those other routes into Brook Trails.
Right. Good question. And let's see. It started with working with CAL FIRE, and that whole Brook Trails area was designated as this high priority for the governor's program. And so they were able to expedite some of their contracts and such, so that that Furco Road has been, you know, when the deputy CEO and I went out there 2 weeks ago, they were making incredible progress on that shaded fuel break on the Furco Road. And then there's also another Shaw Road, which I'm part of the board of the North Coast Railroad Authority. And so I was able to get permission to work on the right-of-way there on the railroad. And so CAL FIRE is going to be working on that one, too, as a shaded fuel break. So those are 2 significant steps along on that. And I have kudos to Chief Patton from the Willits CAL FIRE station, who's been doing just incredible work. You know, certainly there's other areas that we could be working on in the future, and we'll be looking at those areas. But for right now, we're doing that on the Furco and the Shaw Road, and it's progressing really well.
So the shaded fuel break is part of the Brook Trails preparation. Is there anything else around Willits?
They're also working in the Pine Mountain area, too. Mm-hmm. And so they're doing another fuel break there.
All right, we have another caller. Thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hey, this is Ted Williams from the coast.
Hi, Supervisor John Williams.
Hey, Hey, so you're slated to be chair soon, and I'm curious, what best practices will you carry over, and what new ideas might you bring to running meetings?
All right. Well, thanks.
Great question, Ted. Thanks for calling.
Yeah. One of the things that that came out of the grand jury report was this idea that the supervisors weren't really following up on directives that were given. And it has, as you know, I think, that it's been difficult as a new supervisor to really track some of those directives. And so I think we need to do more work on that, making it more accessible to the public and to the supervisors, knowing exactly where we're going with that. But I also think that one of the issues we've had is that the grand jury pointed out was lack of, a strategic focus for the board. And whether it's economic development or homelessness or safety or whatever the issue, that we as a board get caught up in the day-to-day and end up reacting and not knowing really where we're going with in a strategic way. And part of that is, as a new supervisor, that it's hard to tell what's coming up week to week until the Thursday before the Tuesday meeting when the board packet gets sent out.
And if it's hard for you, imagine how it is for all of us out in your constituencies.
Well, because of the Brown Act, I feel like I don't have any greater insight than anyone else. And so as one of the ideas I've been playing with is what if we do a strategic focus look at the forecasting for the board meetings each month, say the first board meeting of each month, look at where we're going and what we have planned for, the upcoming meetings, and to make sure that the prioritization of those agenda items is in line with what the supervisors are thinking is their priority. Because right now, without knowing what's coming up, then it's hard to get out of that reaction mode. And so hopefully I'll be able to implement that as a chair, because right now the chair and the CEO and clerk of the board and county council kind of sit down and come up with the agendas. And so I would like to bring the whole board into that process more.
And just kind of look a little further down the road so that you, as you're at one board meeting, you're thinking about two or three board meetings in the future.
Right. And we can actually prioritize the issues. And so instead of having issues just be put off, until a later date, we can say, hey, that is, what we really need to address at this next meeting or next month, and have this kind of long-term vision that comes with that.
All right, we have another caller. Hey, caller, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I think there has been some vision here in Mendocino County for like the last 10 years, and I agree the leadership issue with the board has definitely been a big deal. Looking back in history, most places that become very economic resilient and are able to pay good wages supply cheap economical power and reliable transportation. So my question is, when are we going to get a public transit mall, number one, which I think we've been asking for like 10 years? And number two, when are we going to build a solar power plant instead of buying power from Sonoma County, who tends to have about 60 days more fog per year than we do? And I'll take my answer on the radio. Thank you.
Great. Thanks for those questions. As far as the transit mall, I'm on that MCOG board, Mendocino Council of Governments, and we were just talking about this grant that they're receiving to study the location and everything. And my question was, where is this location for this transit mall going to be? And they haven't gotten that far yet. And so the study needs to be done, and hopefully it will be done soon and where they can get to work on this, because you know, coordinating transportation from all areas, like you just said, is important. And it could be the Greyhound bus. It could be Lake County, you know, coordinating all these different entities and making it more user friendly for everyone would be great. As far as the solar power plant, I don't know, but I totally support anything we can do with solar and becoming more resilient and independent from what's going on right now with PG&E. One of my questions to the CPUC, the California Public Utilities Commission representative for local governments, who came to the board on Tuesday, and one of my questions to him was, what are you guys doing in at the state level as an oversight board to try to kind of break up PG&E, because this model of too big to fail is not working for us. And when we have these PSPS power shutoffs, public safety power shutoffs, that are contingent upon what's happening over in the Sacramento Valley or in Marin County or Trinity, you know, it's not right to have PG&E have the sole authority for this. And so we need to have local jurisdiction power, and we need to have the ability, you know, in the long term, the ability to break up PG&E and provide our own solar power plants or whatever that might be.
Right. Do you see any way forward to localizing power and utilities here? I mean, all of our power, solar or not, it's from Sonoma County or not, is coming in on lines owned by PG&E. So no matter how we have it organized now, I mean, I pay my power bill to the city of Ukiah, but still we will be subject to the power shutoffs if PG&E decides to flip the switch. How do we get from here to what you're envisioning, which is local resiliency, local control?
Well, that's a huge issue that's way beyond me. But there's a lot of people who are thinking about that. And we gotta move forward. You know, there's a big solar power plant going in, or production field going in Willits Valley. You know, I have my solar panels on my house, which are tied into the grid, so I'm reliant still upon PG&E. And so I think that we need to be thinking big, and we need to be thinking of a way out of this mess that we're in with PG&E controlling the destinies and lives of lots of people, because, like Supervisor McCowan said, lives might be lost in a power shutoff, just from the nature of people who are fragile, people who don't have the ability to buy generators, or people who buy generators start fires. You know, it's going to be, it's a tough situation.
It's no, our power grid is no small thing. The fact that we are 100% reliant on having dependable electricity, and the thought of PG&E just flipping the switch off because to protect themselves from the liability for fires, it kind of brought it all home, how dependent we are on them and how very little say we have in their decisions, especially watching them come and speak to you guys at the board meetings and have and giving you almost no answers when you ask them questions.
Right. We've been very dependent upon them, and it's we've been lulled to sleep, I guess.
They just kept the power coming, and we just let it happen, right. I guess. The number in the studio, we have just a few more minutes left. We can get one or two more calls in, 895-2448. And we're here in the studio with 3rd District County Supervisor John Hashak. Thank you so much for coming to Philo.
Oh, sure. It's been a pleasure. And just to follow up with that Indigenous People's Day, it's just totally right to recognize the Indigenous people and the beautiful contributions they make to our community and being part of our community. It's just, hopefully we can move forward with this. And like I said at the board meeting, you know, let's go out, let's take this out to the community, let's take it out to schools and teach the children, you know, something besides a myth of Columbus, but rather the reality of what the people of our communities have to share with us.
Yeah, well, when you were talking about strategic planning and looking forward past just this agenda and the weeks and the months in advance so that you can actually get some larger plans accomplished, I was thinking about Indigenous Peoples Day and your resolution on Tuesday as being a first step toward that, that really it's a good start, but there's so much more to repair and heal the historic legacy of abuse and genocide here that needs to be taken. The next steps need to be taken. Do you have any thoughts about strategic planning around justice for Indigenous communities here?
Well, hopefully we can have some conversations with tribal leaders and just see what their ideas are, too, to share with us to ways to move forward. Mine was, because of my education background, take it to the schools. But I'm sure other people have been thinking about this for a long time who have lots more.
All right, we have one more caller. Hey, caller, you're on the air.
Is that me?
Yep, that's you. Go ahead.
It's okay. This is Freddie from Willits. I'm so glad the issue of the brownout came up because while Supervisor Hashek was talking about it, I was thinking already, like, is this the way our supervisors are allowed to communicate with each other? Is by calling in when they're publicly speaking? I mean, the Brown Act has lots of problems as far as I can see, because it means that people aren't allowed, our representatives are not allowed to talk to each other. So that's all I have to say.
All right. Thanks for that call, Freddie.
All right. Thanks, Freddie, for that comment. You know, the Brown Act, the idea of it, the concept of making sure that decisions are made in front of the public, that backroom deals aren't being made, that's a good concept. But it is, in a way, frustrating for a person like me who needs to have lots of background information to make a good decision. And it's hard to get that, especially when, like in our situation with the board, you have an ad hoc making a recommendation, but you can't talk to those people on that ad hoc because that would be breaking the Brown Act. And so you're kind of left in the making a decision and getting that information, seeing what the other thoughts are at the board meeting. And with time,
yeah, your hands feel kind of tied.
Yeah, it feels a little constrictive. So
all right,
I agree with that.
With that, I'm going to have to draw the show to a close. But thank you very much, Supervisor Hashek, for coming into KZYX to talk with us. This is Alicia Bales. My guest this morning has been John Hashek, 3rd District Supervisor for Mendocino County. And if you enjoyed this program, make sure to tune in next week on Monday, August 26th at 11 a.m. when 4th District Supervisor Dan Jurdy will be joining me for a similar open lines conversation. So again, thank you for coming into the studio, John. And special thanks to Rich Culbertson for engineering. And most of all, thanks to you for listening and for calling in.